There's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Do you understand what I'm talking about? What is our common bond truly? Freedom. Freedom. Without freedom, you can't be a Christian no matter what denomination you belong to. You can't be a Buddhist. You can't own a donut shop. You can't drive from here to Oregon. You can't be an American because that's what it's all about, and it's the only thing that it's all about. Nothing else. Nothing else.
The utmost manifestation of love and devotion to America is today, as it always has been, resistance of tyranny. Resist we must, and resist we will. We will not be silent. We will not obey. We will not wait another moment in fear to stand up for what we know to be right. It is time we start meeting oppression with resistance.
It's about freedom. Only freedom. It means you have to let other people be free.
Salutations. This is December 4th, 2008. You're listening to the Truth Love Freedom Radio Show. I am your host, So Real. And tonight we're going to be kind of around the bush a little bit about things. Just kind of whatever comes to mind. Whatever it is that we need to talk about. I have a couple guests going to be showing up here shortly. They're going to join me in a conversation about their experiences at the End the Fed protest up in San Francisco, and just their involvement in the Ron Paul campaign and various things in general. And who knows what else we'll talk about. No matter what, guaranteed to be good stuff. Hope you had a good Thanksgiving. I did. Got to see my family. Spent a couple days up in LA, which was nice to get away every now and again. It's nice to leave the trees and the bush and actually go to some place that feels like there's, you know, civilization. And, but yeah, seeing family was great. Hope you all had a great Thanksgiving. Many things to be thankful for. Many things not to be thankful for. Not the least of them being the Federal Reserve. But, hey. I'm going to welcome you to call in at any given time. The number is 1-877-REVERE-0. That's 1-877-738-3730. We will be taking calls to talk about whatever you want to talk about. On a bit of good news, my podcasts have been getting downloads like crazy. I mean, crazy. My podcast where I did the interpretation of the Cornerstone and the Rough Ashlar right now is about 4,000 downloads. And that was only, that hasn't surpassed my Freemason interview downloads, but it's certainly spreading around and, you know, whatnot. So that's really interesting, and you know, it seems like most of the good responses that I get come from the breakdown of the esoteric, you know, schools of the mystery schools, Freemasonry, Rosicrucian, whatever. Whenever I talk about the mystery schools, it seems to be a popular subject, which is actually pretty shocking to me, especially because I'm very critical of the mystery schools, and that doesn't seem to be very popular these days. It seems to me that the mystery schools teachings are very popular, but not from somebody who's coming from a perspective that disagrees with them. So that was really encouraging. Yeah. So anyways, I started a few segments not too long ago, and the person that was my co-host ended up breaking off and not being able to participate in the show anymore. So because I started all that stuff, and then on the very next show, he was like gone, and I had to figure out what I was going to do. I decided to basically drop a couple of them because they were involved with him and stick with the ones that I could do. I'm not doing all the segments now. I'm going to reincorporate them slowly as I get used to being alone again, because now all the buttons are up to me again. And it's you know, as much, I'm pretty tech savvy, but even then, sometimes it can get a little daunting to have to pay attention to so much, you know, and make sure that you actually can hear what I'm saying out there. And one of the segments that I want to bring back here, that I said I was going to start, and I'm going to continue with it. I just haven't really been responsible and been on top of things, and our last few shows have been like crash course style, just kind of going for it. Is the health segment by Jeff? Me and him met at a Ron Paul meetup, and we started talking, and we have some similar views on health. Basically, you know, we did a whole interview with him before. You're welcome to go back and listen to it. But basically, he looks at things the same way as I do, in the sense that we look at the body and the earth as providing everything we need for health. The premise in science is that the body is a bad design, and that the design flaws are something that they have to pay attention to, and they have to create medicines to work with the body so that the body can heal itself and whatnot. I come from the school, and so does Jeff, that the body is not a bad design. The body is actually, whether you believe in evolution or you believe in creationism, either way, the body has developed what it needs. The problem is we don't give it the nutrients it needs to do its job. And that with proper nutrition, almost any disease can be defeated. Not to say that it's easily done, and not to say that there isn't, you know, valid medicines out there, but the majority of which in the medical industry are pretty much lame. They're unnecessary. Vaccinations are a case in point. Many of the vaccinations that here in America that we have to take are no longer needed. They're basically just a way for the corporate medical industry to make money. And that it even harms the body. But even more so, you know, things like the flu, you know, we know that people were getting antibiotics, and we knew the effect that was having on the body and on people's immunities. Two very simple, because they're not taking it correctly, it would take them from number one, if you don't take the antibiotics and you just let your body heal it, it creates the immunity for that particular virus or bug. If you take antibiotics and you don't do it correctly, the antibiotics become useless against that, and it can actually adapt and change so that the antibiotics cannot affect it. So it, you know, it's a two-edged sword there. The best thing to do is rather than take antibiotics is just to let your body go through the course and provide it with the nutrients necessary to boost immunities. And, you know, unfortunately, in the medical industry today, most of the people have the corporate medical industry, I should say, because there are some honest people out there in the medical industry. But the corporate medical industry would like to have you think that without them, simple things like flus would cause you to die, and that's just not the case. So to go ahead and let me go ahead and go into Jeff's little thing here on depression, and I'll be back in just a second.
Antidepressant medication commercial. On the commercial, they have a picture of a brain, sort of a scientific-looking picture, and they're showing the brain producing these chemicals. And they're showing how when these chemicals are being produced, the person is happy, but in some people, the chemicals just aren't being produced, and then the person feels depressed. So it's almost as if, out of nowhere, for no reason at all, these chemicals just stop working. And of course, the logical conclusion that flows from that is that you need to chemically fix the problem with, in this case, their particular medication. But I want to present a different side to the whole depression issue.
And I thought the best way to do this would be with an example. So here's a story about Alexander. Alexander lived in Germany in the 1940s. Alexander was in the business of printing children's books. If you were to ask him about his job, he would basically say, he's the luckiest person in the world. What more could someone want? Not only is he contributing to the joy of all these children, but Alexander felt that he was contributing to the education of the next generation. He really felt like he was contributing. Now, if we were to zero in on Alexander's brain during this time, those same chemicals that are sort of blamed as a culprit in depression, Alexander wouldn't be lacking those chemicals. Things were soon to change. Alexander was approached by a government agency about participating in a project. Alexander's job was going to be to find a special type of paper. For him, even though it wasn't children's books, the money was good, and he thought he'd do it for a while. It'd be sort of a good change. So Alexander signed the contract, and he went to work. He did find it a little bit curious, and he investigated a little bit further, and he discovered that there was a counterfeiting operation going on. The Nazis were attempting to counterfeit the U.S. dollar in an attempt to fund their war effort. See, Alexander was against the war. He didn't want to make a big scene. On the other hand, he didn't want to participate. So he thought he could sort of stay out of it, but he found himself right entrenched within the whole war issue. But as Alexander discovered that he was actually participating, he became more and more depressed. He had a hard time getting out of bed in the morning. He wanted to spend a lot of time by himself. He found himself dazing, daydreaming. He didn't have very much energy. If we were to sort of zoom in on Alexander's brain, we would find that his brain looks very much like that brain in the depression commercial that I alluded to in the beginning. His brain now wasn't producing these chemicals like serotonin. Now, what they don't mention in this commercial is that at the very moment your brain is in this sort of mode, this depression mode, different areas of the brain are activated and are communicating with each other, especially the creative part of your brain. Also, during this time, you're calling upon all your past memories. So you're sort of going into your long-term memory, and it's almost like it's an attempt to call on all your resources to try to find a solution for the problem that you're in. So what Alexander ended up doing is he just spent a lot of time brainstorming. He knew he didn't want to participate. He also knew he signed the contract, and if he didn't do the job, he could really get in trouble. After about 3 weeks, all of a sudden, the light went on. I know, he thought, I can create this special paper I learned about in school. This paper has all the qualities that I was contracted to make, but there's one little difference. This paper, when you go to print on it, the ink will smear just enough so that anyone could recognize that this money is in fact counterfeit, but it won't be obvious enough that I can be blamed for doing it intentionally. Would you believe at that exact moment that Alexander had his epiphany, at that precise moment, suddenly the endorphins, the serotonin, all these chemicals that his brain wasn't producing, now his brain was producing. This is very typical. When you are confused, when you lose direction, when something just doesn't seem right, your brain needs to stop and reevaluate what you're doing. It's not a time that you have a lot of energy or inspiration. No, it's a time that your brain is geared more towards reflection. Alexander did the right thing. He allowed himself the experience of the depression. He was not focused on getting rid of the depression. No, he was focused on finding a solution to the dilemma he found himself in. As it turned out, the counterfeiting scheme failed. Because of Alexander's action, countless lives were saved. But I want to get into the political side of depression. Any despot, any tyrant, they have grand schemes. But in order to implement their grand schemes, they need individuals participating. But there's one problem with their grand schemes. Human nature is such that we don't want to be controlled. When we are controlled, we feel a little bit uneasy. When things aren't right, we get depressed in order to find solutions, get back on track. So what does a despot do? The despot introduces a philosophy that your uneasiness, your anger, your depression is a disease. At the very moment you accept that premise, you will begin seeking treatment for the depression. You'll go to counselors, not to help you find better ways to overturn the desk, but no, you'll ask the counselor how he can help you with your depression, as if the depression is the thing that needs to be resolved. So my advice to you, the individual, is real simple. Consider the possibility that your depression itself has a purpose. When you feel depressed, let yourself feel depressed. Don't try to treat your depression. Through the depression comes a new vision, and it's the new vision that's the source of your new inspiration. As long as you experience a depression, you'll get a new sense of direction. We need to have a way to sort of get back on track when we're off track, and depression is the perfect way to do it. The irony is that as long as you treat the depression, you can't get back on track, and if you can't get back on track, you can never get your inspiration, and so you'll always be depressed. And you don't have to make it too complicated. Depression speaks its own language. You just have to experience it. Try it out and see what happens.
Okay, we're back. Now, that is a segment that we're going to be doing here every week now with Jeff. He's going to be breaking it down, and I wish I had his information ready, but I don't. I'm sorry, Jeff. Next week, I'll make sure I have the information on how to contact him. His website is healthbyyourself.com. Go down, check it out. He has some very interesting takes on some of the diseases that are plaguing people today. And I think that, you know, like I said, I see eye to eye with him on almost everything that he said. So I think that it's definitely worth perusal. And if you need any of his services, his information is on the website, healthbyyourself.com. Now, right here in the studio, we have two friends with us. Go ahead and introduce yourselves, and we'll go ahead and talk about the In the Fed.
Cool. Hi, everybody. My name's Amber. And, yeah,
here's... Hi, I'm Dina.
Now, I met both of these. Well, actually, I met you before Ron Paul. I met you in the Ron Paul. So you're both Ron Paul supporters.
Yeah.
And most of the people who listen to Revere Radio and, you know, this show in particular are Ron Paul supporters. So
Yeah. That's
a good thing. So also, just wanted to let you know, and I said this at the very beginning, they actually just got back from the In the Fed protest, which we're going to be talking to them about. Up in San Francisco. We're on the West Coast, in case you didn't know. We're in California, so that was the nearest one to us, and, you know, I wish I could have been there. I'm really bummed out that I had family come to visit. You know, it was the first time they've come to visit in my new house, and, you know, I was like, dang.
You had to be here.
Yeah. Yeah, I almost told them not to come. So, anyways, I mean, I love my family to death, but I really wanted to be there, and, you know, it's a shame I couldn't be. But next time, I'm going to be there for sure.
Right on.
I'm coming hell or high water. So, Yeah. Anyways, how'd you like it?
Liked it a lot. Mm-hmm. It was really great, yeah. We got there, like, right on time. I think where it started was the Fisherman's Wharf,
mm-hmm. And
a lot of people, you know, they're all... they all met there. There were great banners and great signs and don't tread on me flags and really just great, great visuals. A man on stilts, he was carrying an American flag. And
he was dressed as Uncle Sam.
Yeah, oh, it was Yeah. Great.
You know, that's the cool thing about San Francisco is Yeah. They have very creative ways of protesting.
Definitely.
Like, you know, other parts of the country, I think they're boring compared to San Francisco.
Yeah.
I've seen several protests there. you will see guys on stilts and
people
juggling fire and everything else you can imagine.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. That was pretty awesome. I know when I got there, I was like, this is so San Francisco. I dig it. But there was one thing that was really funny that I thought was really a cool way to represent the Ben Bernanke and Paulson kind of throwing money out into the... Do you remember that helicopter that they had?
Oh, yeah. That was... I wonder if there's images of that online.
I think several different websites have... and the Fed websites have pictures of a helicopter with Ben Bernanke's face sticking out of it.
Really?
So these two guys...
they took Ken dolls. They took Ken dolls and made a model, basically.
Yeah. They had this helicopter that was probably some, you know, uber huge G.I. Joe helicopter model. They put two Ken dolls. For Ben Bernanke, they put this horribly awesome beard on his chin. So they're hanging out of the helicopter, and then they had the all these dollars and $20, I don't know.
Was it real money?
No, it was fake money.
Oh, fake money,
but just kind of like coming out of the helicopter.
Well, it would have been fake money anyways, but...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, money is debt. But they had a sign next to it, "Don't let Helicopter Ben drop money on you." It was pretty awesome.
Oh, that's
it was
awesome. Really funny. That is great.
So really neat little things like that.
Yeah, I'd like to see pictures of that. That's awesome. It reminds me of this group of people I heard about, and they went out. They're a Christian-based group, but they went out on top of the buildings and Wall Street.
Oh, wow.
And they dumped actual real money, believe it or not. It was like, I forget how many thousands of dollars they collected for it, but dumped real money out on the street, and they yelled on microphones to stop worshiping money.
No way! When did that happen?
That happened a couple years ago. I don't know exactly when it happened, but...
Oh, that's pretty awesome.
It's pretty gnarly. And you know, it's funny because they didn't get too much attention for that, but I would imagine... Somebody doing something like that would get a lot of attention. But,
yeah,
it's awesome. I love when people do stuff like that. It's creative ways, you know, the creative ways that we find to protest, you know, the powers that be. You know, it seems like they've limited us to so little to be able to do things that, you know, you have to be creative to really have an impact on society. Like protesting,
really,
especially when there's so many people protesting. You have people protesting, you know, the religious right, protesting, God, you've seen all the ridiculous things that they have, and all the way to the left. And to stand out and really have a message, you have to be really, really creative these days.
Yeah, definitely.
There was a lot of really good signs, actually, you know, really, that I saw normal people... When they were watching, they kind of were like, what is that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, a guy had a, "It's not federal." And then the other one said, "And there's no reserve." You know, obviously, that's sort of the main... Mm-hmm. That's sort of the, even the most dramatic thing about it is that it's named something so clearly not what it is. You know, it's not federal. It's not a reserve.
Yeah.
So it was nice to see that people were kind of like a light was going off in their head.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the day before I was talking to at the box office where I work... to this lady about the protest, and she didn't know anything about it, and she's a grown lady, you know. She didn't know anything about it. She had absolutely no idea what the Federal Reserve was, I mean, let alone what it was, but how it came into existence. And
That's unfortunately so common. Like, I talked to people about the Federal Reserve before, and most of the time I get people going, what's the Federal Reserve? Okay, we have a call coming in.
Yay.
Caller, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Hi. You're on the air.
Hey, Carl?
Yes.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I was at the Federal Reserve protest in San Francisco.
Oh, yeah, he went with us.
Oh, really? Nice, nice. Awesome.
What's up, Ryan? Wow!
Hey, guys. There was a lot of people there. It was really fun, and everyone showed up all over the country, and I was really surprised to see how many people showed up even in the small city.
Awesome. So, Ryan, how did you find out about the hoax called the Fed?
The hoax called the Fed? Well, common sense kind of will tell you about the hoax about the Fed with all the money they print. You know, obviously, that's not making anyone rich.
Right.
But Ron Paul really brought that out, and that's how I heard about it.
Awesome. That's great. See, that's one of the great things about Ron Paul, too, is you get... I mean, so many people became aware of this. I couldn't believe my jaw hit the floor the day they start talking about the Federal Reserve at a debate for the Republican Party.
Yeah.
I was like, no way.
It's happening finally.
It's crazy. It's just, it's so bizarre, you know. It's awesome to hear that more and more people are coming on board and knowing what's going on. So you went up to the, do you have anything to say about the protest up there? Did you participate in it? And what exactly did you?
I don't think this is going to be the last one. I know the guys that were planning it, they're trying to get a... 5,000 people at each one on, like, March 14th, I believe it is.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Of next year.
Oh.
They want to get 5,000 people at each one, and so, and they want to, important thing is to get all the signatures for, to get, to support the H.R. 2559 or Ron Paul's bill.
Yeah, I'm going
to
be.
And the Fed.
Awesome.
I'm going to be going over that in a little bit. And Ryan, did you, the March date that you have, I couldn't find that paper that had the different dates. They kind of have an end the Federal Reserve action plan where it's like they want a million signatures against the Federal Reserve for H.R. 2755 by January 22nd or 19th, I believe. And do you have a paper that has the dates on that, or do you have that information with you?
No, I think you can just Google it.
Okay, I tried to find it, but I couldn't find it. I know I have an email. I thought they sent me an email with it, but maybe I was mistaken. I couldn't find it today. But, yeah, I was going to go over H.R. 2755 and people, a link that if people go to campaignforliberty.org, on that website, they have a link to the H.R. 2755, and I think they have it on endthefed.us as well.
Endthefed.us, okay.
Yeah, so if you just print a bunch of them, get a lot of people to sign it, and then, you know, mail it into the proper people, it would be really, really important to do, so.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll definitely keep on track on that and inform everybody who's listening the details about that. I have to look it up. I wasn't prepared either. This is a little bit of a, you know, like I said, it's a hit or miss here because I didn't get prepared early enough. But, yeah, we'll go ahead and look it up. Anything you got else to say, Ryan?
No, that's it, guys.
Okay, hey. Thanks for your help in keeping us free.
Yeah, you too.
Have a great night, Ryan.
You rock, Ryan.
Rock and roll. See you in January. We're going to start it up. Well, keep it going, I guess.
All right. Thanks for the call, Ryan. So give me some more information. I wasn't there, so paint a picture for me. What was it like? Like, okay. How did you feel? Was there anything that stood out? Was there any ancient provocateurs or anything like that?
Sadly enough, it was actually my first real protest that I've ever been to. And everybody was saying, there's a lot more people than I expected. But I was thinking, not me. I expected, you know, thousands and thousands of people. But it was probably, how many, what do you think? Like, it seemed like it might have been 1,500 or 2,000 maybe. I don't know. Like,
I'm not sure. Oh, gosh. You know, it felt like when we were kind of weaving through the streets, it felt like there were a lot of people for sure.
We took up a couple blocks.
That's for sure. Yeah, big blocks. But I don't know about thousands. I know at least, I was kind of thinking 500 to 600. I'm not sure. I heard people saying numbers. I know that there were smaller protests around the country, and then there were bigger ones. And some of the bigger ones ranged to like 700 to 800. I don't know. 500. Yeah. 400.
Not sure. I've seen videos, but I didn't like hear about any counts. Well, you know, and sometimes you can never tell because sometimes people exaggerate them.
For sure.
You know,
I
would like to think there's thousands and thousands of people there, but realistically, when you see the footage, you're like 800 or 900.
Yeah.
You know,
there was a protest I went to in San Francisco like 10 years ago, and there were so many people there, but it was specifically for something that I think people came from all over the country for. So if we, you know, if you figure 39 cities, I think I actually saw reports of 43 or 45 cities because people protested in other cities whether there was a Federal Reserve Bank or not.
Right, right.
And sometimes there weren't banks. They did it at Federal Reserve offices or whatever. If you just mush all those people together, there's a whole heck of a lot of us.
Yeah, so it would have been really nice to just have them all march on, you know, the...
Yeah, for sure.
March
try
on
and
the,
centralize it or...
Huh?
Oh, down... Oh, you
oh
mean,
yeah,
yeah,
like in New York, you know, in front of the main building. That would have been nice, but you know, we're building an army here, you know, because I bet you had it not been for Ron Paul, it probably would have been quite less. I mean, it would probably be like a quarter that many if they're lucky.
Yeah, he definitely got a lot of people thinking about this kind of stuff, and that made it more apparent that it was that it's time to start talking about it, you know, because a lot of the things he talked about was sort of blacklisted in some ways on national television, but yet they were never able to really just discredit him either. And they couldn't actually just come right out and say, oh, his supporters are kooks or whatever. They tried to, but they could never really say it right away, like in a real way, because I think it's just too powerful what he's talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
For sure.
Plus, I think people just, you know, they see the economy is going to trash. They see the American way is going away. And they're just like, what's going on? Like, and, you know, they're always pitching this thing in the media, like the left-right paradigm, like, you know, it's the left. They're doing it. They're destroying America. And then there's like, no, it's the right. The right is like, you know, making everything a theocracy. And it's like this, they got this huge battle going on. Meanwhile, they're cashing in head over fist.
They're just,
you know, just soaking up the wealth of the nation. And
they're so using that to keep our brains occupied with that kind of baloney. And it's just really sad, especially, I mean, I'm sure, you know, with the past election we just had, to watch people become very pro one candidate or another and trying to explain to them, I don't think you understand. Those two people are both, you know, in cahoots, I guess you could say, with the same people. And it's the different means to the same end, you know. So at least that's how I felt. So, I mean, they are connected. I mean, their cabinets would have been controlled. I mean, here we got Hillary, Secretary of, you know, State, I believe. Am I retarded? Oh, my gosh. Did I say that wrong? Anyways, I didn't get much sleep last night. But, yeah.
Yeah, I think she's supposed to be the Secretary of State.
State, yeah.
Right.
So it's just I'm really sad. I don't know. We got her anyways.
Yeah. I'm not surprised when I heard that. I was like, oh, definitely, you know, not. Of course not.
Something really interesting that happened was when Cindy Sheehan spoke.
Mm-hmm.
She was one of the speakers. She kind of was, she was like, wow, it's kind of like preaching to the choir, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It did feel like we were all there. Was there anybody really new there who didn't know anything about it?
Yeah.
But the nice thing about it that she said was, yeah, but the most important thing is that you have to remember, no matter where you, what your sort of main train of thought is or your main philosophy about this movement is we have to push our differences aside come together on certain things that we can agree on. You know?
Right, that's absolutely true.
So it's sort of splintering even as it's becoming strong, the whole sort of movement, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Everybody's joining
it
their camp.
It is starting to camp out. Yeah, I've been talking about that recently on previous shows about how it's starting to become trendy and there's like these cliques.
Yeah.
You know, there's the Zeiters, the Zeiters, and the 9/11ers. It's like, oh, geez, you know?
It's kind of worrying me a little bit, but I think some people, they're really keeping their head and knowing that they can kind of stick to the main issue here, which is, we have such a serious issue with our country and the world.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm glad you brought that up, because there were several different people who spoke at the San Francisco and the Fed march and rally, and several of them had such different ideas. I mean, an idea, you know, bringing back the using gold, silver, backing our money
and all that.
And I'm like, heck yeah, right on. And then some people who are against money altogether, I believe, or they have different ideas
of it.
Cashless
society people, yeah.
Right. And it made me think, you know, it's really neat to hear the different perspectives. Of course, still in my own mind, I think, well, it would be easier at this point to go back to a gold standard right now rather than going cashless or, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's kind of like in my mind, the more information you read, you take it and go, what's more realistic right now? What's like a real realistic goal we can go towards, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, going towards a society where it's just straight up trade or, you know, which is great. I mean,
bartering,
I don't know.
Yeah,
right, bartering. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a great idea, but I think we need to be a little more realistic.
Let's
back it up a little bit, you know, first get rid of the Fed. And
right. It's like, I understand that, you know, there are these ideas of better ways to run the economy, whether it be cashless, whether it be, you know, no economy at all, per se, barter society, whatever it be. But, you know, right now we're dealing with a person, a human being. Look at the economy like a human being. It's a decaying human being. It's a person that's about to die.
Right.
It's a person that's has leeches all over him, sucking the blood out of him. So you don't want to go back and say, hey, little, you know, let's go through and start filling him up with vitamins and this and that. You first need to get rid of the leeches. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
And that's kind of what we're dealing with right now. Our economy has so many crooks inside of it. The only way to really figure out what's the right ways to get it back to where it was when it was a solid economy, and then go, okay, now what can we do? Let's be creative here. You know, trust me, if anybody doesn't want to be stuck under the strong hand of an economy type government, because I understand in free market, and I believe in the free market because I believe in freedom, and I think that's the only way you can have true freedom. But in another aspect, I also realize that as long as you have a free market, you're gonna have leeches. They're gonna find loopholes. The people are eventually gonna become apathetic and lazy because they're gonna think everything's okay, and then we're gonna be right back at it again, trying to defend freedom. And you know, I just think that it would be nice to hear about some other options out there. Recently, I had an interview with the guy from the Venus Project.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah, and that was really interesting. Not to say that I completely disagreed with him on almost everything he said, but the idea of not working, hey, that's appealing.
It is appealing.
I do like that idea. Like,
very,
you know,
appealing.
I would like to spend my days doing something I actually care about.
You know, I think I only heard the first half of that interview that you had with him. I only got a chance to listen the first half, and I just watched Zeitgeist Addendum this past weekend, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So in the end, I mean, does he agree with the people who made the first Zeitgeist movie? Okay.
He said everything but the conspiracy stuff, which is the whole damn movie.
It's the whole movie.
It's the whole movie. I mean, the only thing the only conspiracy he seems to buy into is that money corrupts people.
Okay.
That's the only thing that he bought into, and that the Federal Reserve, I mean, he seemed like he was willing to embrace the idea of the money changers, the people who control things, this and that. I don't think he has like an idea about the Rothschilds, the Federal Reserve, and how it was done corruptively or whatever. I don't think that he'd have a problem with that, but it was more or less an ethical, like, money corrupts, you know, absolutely, you know.
For sure.
So it didn't seem like he obviously didn't care think about 9/11 as an inside job. I asked him about that specifically, and he said no.
Wow.
So yeah, you know, that's what happens. I mean, you should do a little bit more research before you become the focus of somebody's film.
Oh, that's so true. I know. I was kind of interested. Well, hearing a few of the things you said to him, I was like, wow, he's an addendum, and he doesn't seem to really get what it was about. The first one was about.
Right.
And you.
And even then, I don't even think he, like, you know, he was, you know, he was hard of hearing, so right. I don't think he really got what I was asking him. Right. I just assumed that by me asking questions a certain way, he would be like, yeah, yeah, and then it was an inside job, and, you know, no, he was like, it just went right over his head, and he just kept going on with this spiel. And the funny thing is that the interview he gave to me, I've heard other interviews he's done, and it was almost exactly verbatim, the exact thing he said to them.
Yeah, wow.
So it was like, okay, well, so much for this interview. But it was interesting. It was definitely interesting, I think, yeah, you know, it's okay to be a visionary about things, but I definitely am a free market capitalist type person, only because I don't think there is another system.
Well,
you know, there's nothing else that I can think of.
Right. It seems to me that, and I am definitely not an economist, and I'm definitely not majorly well read up on different ways of going about having an economy, but like capitalism seems to me to be the only one that's really worked in a less, I don't know, compared to communism, you know, all these different ways of having things. It just so far seems to me to be the one that has the best, what's the word? Possibility of least corruption. I don't know how to explain what I'm trying to say, because again, I really need to study it more. But especially that it's connected with the way our country was in the beginning, which I really, you know, I think we had a really great framework, and we need to stick to that, because I think we're the only country that has that kind of a framework for the way our government would work. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, bringing in natural rights, you know, that are bestowed to us on, by God and all that, and, or whatever you want to call it. So, I mean, I think that's really, really important, and it seems to me that that's the free market, you know, capitalism, all this, it just goes with it. And
absolutely.
So, everything, every system is going to have some sort of way to be corrupted. Even a barter system is going to have a way to be corrupted.
So, and it did. Like, that's how the original taxation used to take care of this, that take the gold coins and chip them.
Right.
So the little pieces of coin would come off of the actual gold, and then they would, that would be how they got paid.
Exactly.
They would be robbing people that way.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So there's nothing that's uncorruptible. Any system can be corrupted by nature. It's just unavoidable. But like you're saying, I think I understand what you're saying, which is that the market, the system that we're in now, or were in before the Federal Reserve came about, was the least corruptible because it actually had accountability. You had the motive to pay attention to what was going on because you had something to lose and gain from it.
Right, right.
You know, centralized economies where they're controlled by government and or whatever, that, you know, things like the Federal Reserve or something like that are ways that people can profit off of your loss are going to be societies that breed, you know, vipers, basically.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think that you're right. That's why, you know, I was looking back, you know, thinking about the founders of our country, that they really believed in free market capitalism because they really believed that there was no other way to be, you know, to do trade. I mean, barter systems are so slow. I mean, you can imagine you have a goat and you want two chickens, but the person who has two chickens doesn't want a goat. So you have to go to a person. You ask the guy with two chickens, what do you want? Oh, I want a sheep. Okay, then I'm going to go find some of the sheep. But the person with the sheep doesn't want. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you have to go through and make all these arrangements in order to have it get done. And, you know, the marketplace was the best correction for that. Yeah. They would go to the marketplace and they would trade. And because everything was right there and they could go, you know, and figure it out.
Yeah.
But even then, I mean, people would travel from forever, you know, just to get to the marketplace. And there needs to be a viable means of trading goods and services.
Yeah.
And currency is good for that. You know, gold was the original coin before they moved to paper money. And, you know, the thing is that if you know, you should be able to have currency, work hard, make the money, and have the money's value not change.
Right. Amen.
I mean, you worked hard for that money. Why should I take money and put it in the bank? Like, they were talking about savings. Ron Paul always brings this up. Why would I save?
Yeah.
By saving, I'm losing money.
Yeah. Totally.
The best thing to do is to take the money as soon as I get it and spend it, because I'll get the most value out of that money as I'll ever get.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And that's just, it's a ridiculous scenario that we're in, that this mentality. You know, I was hearing another host on another show, but I don't remember what it was. He was playing clips on the news, and they're basically blaming the people for not spending enough money at Christmas time, that was that Black Friday or whatever?
Yeah, Black Friday.
Everyone goes out and goes shopping, that there wasn't enough money to stave our economy off for a little bit longer.
Yeah, what do you...
You know, like... And, you know, it's totally
absurd. They're
being
blatant about it almost now.
What now?
They're being blatant about it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just actually coming right out and saying, oh, I wish the people were buying more shit.
Yeah, exactly. yeah,
sorry.
You know? No, this is a free speech radio. Feel free. But no, it's true. You know, they basically are saying that if you don't go and put yourself in debt spending money you don't have, you're not American.
Yeah.
You're not supporting this country.
Gosh,
it's a total absurdity. But this is the level that we've gotten to today. And that's the thing is, like, you know, people don't even know what the Federal Reserve is. Mm. I talk to people who, if it's not people who are in the know, and I know who's in the know, it's people, you know, that are involved in politics. That I talk to people who don't know the difference between a conservative and a liberal. Right. I talk to people who don't know what the Federal Reserve is. They can't tell you who the Secretary of State is. They can't, you know what I'm saying? They just don't know anything, and they're not concerned with it.
Right.
You know, it takes high. I mean, look how high the gas prices got. If this happened in the 60s, there'd be rioting in the streets.
Yeah.
You know, and this kind of degrading of our society is what you see today. It's absolutely baffling to me. You know, and that's why I was like so gung-ho, but at the same time, like, I wonder what kind of effect did you feel like you had there? I mean, when you did, you have people walk up to you and go, what are you doing?
I know for me, I ended up buying a book that was being sold there as like a donation. Jeremy, what's his last name? Do you remember that?
The
name of the book is Fighting for God, which stands for gold, oil, and drugs. Coming back to what kind of effect I read it. It's kind of like a comic book, similar to the the war profiteering book, and it's comic book style, so it's very simple to read. But anyway, since I've gotten back, I've been able to lend it to a lot of people who I would say they're intelligent. They're just not in any way ready to think about that kind of stuff.
Right.
But the way the first part of it explains, have you read it yet? It really changed my whole perspective on even understanding what I went to protest, because it talks about the first banking system, and it explains how banking even started, which was essentially people were trying to keep their gold safe, and so they would take them to people who had vaults, storehouses, and they would write them a receipt. This is how much gold you have, you know? But what they figured out right in the early stages of doing this is that they could actually sort of fudge on the receipts and give out more of them, because at any given time, there's going to be a surplus of gold in the vault, because not every person's going to come every single day to take all our money. Mm-hmm. Like, what would happen if we all went right now and pulled all our money from the banks, basically?
Right.
They're counting on the fact that that won't happen. So
yeah, it's that ratio where some people take it in, take out, take in.
Right,
take out,
so there's always
a certain
surplus.
Amount.
Yeah. And so what they would do is they would have these receipts, and after a while they realized they could also loan money in this way, because there would be extra money in the banks, which is essentially how banks even function, is that by loaning money.
Mm-hmm.
But what they realized was that they could put a lot of receipts, or a so-called paper money, like when it became that transition to having paper money.
Mm-hmm.
They could print extra and kind of fudge on it and put a lot into the system, which would make people buy things and make them go out and, like, buy a new horse or new, you know, cart or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But then after a while, they could pull some of them back and ask for their loans back and destroy some of the receipts, still having the same amount of gold there.
Mm-hmm.
But what would happen is some people wouldn't be able to finish paying off their cart, or they would have to sell their cart to end up buying a different horse because, you know, whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
So then they were able to buy all those things for cheaper. So it was basically, bankers realized right away that they could control the system by also causing some people to have to sell things back to the bank, you know, because the bank owns your car, they own your house, you know, so they realize they can make money with exactly what's happening right now with the housing crisis.
Right.
Just by making it. But just the way that it explains it, I really recommend that if you have anybody in your life who... even young people, but, you know, who isn't really necessarily able to sit down and read an entire book or to even be super active all the time, but just starting to kind of light that glimmer in people's head that there's something really wrong going on that's also incredibly obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Just explaining it that way really helped.
Yeah,
so that, to me, that was the best thing that I got out of it, was being able to meet people who are the like-minded, but then finding another way to explain this kind of stuff to people who aren't like-minded, you know?
Right. Absolutely.
One thing that I really liked about it, well, I mean, obviously it was really nice to have people honking at us as we went down the streets, you know? There would be points during the walk where we would stop in an area, and there would be a lot of people shopping in the Union Square area. You know, we stayed for quite a good amount of time in the Union Square area, like walking around it, kind of. We walked like about halfway around it, but stood on a corner, and we were, you know, of course, chanting and yelling and the Fed and whatever else, and it's not federal. No,
it's not funny. Federal.
I was saying it's illegal. I was cracking up every time Dina would go, "It's illegal." She had a son that said, "It's illegal." Anyways, it is illegal.
It really touched people. I think some people were like, "It is illegal."
It's illegal. But yeah, so we would stop at certain points, and it was great because thank goodness some people came quite prepared with their at least 2, 3, 4 different types of handouts, mm-hmm. and they had a whole booger load of them in their bags. So they'd, you know, give me a whole chunk of them. I'd walk out, and Dean would walk out, and we'd, like, pass them around to people. And as you hand it to someone, you know, kind of look them in the eye and say, you know, this is very, very important. This is going to affect you, your family, your kids, mm-hmm. your grandkids, kids, yeah. and on into the, I mean, you need to please pay attention to this. Go to this website, you know, in a very nice and easy way. And mm-hmm. there were people who were, you know, they were like, wow, what? You know, they didn't. You could see in some of their eyes they were really kind of like, hey, you know, we really do need to look into this, I hope, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
at
yeah.
that moment when you see a whole bunch of people coming down the street yelling something, you know, it must be something big, you know.
Yeah,
so, I mean, at
yeah.
the very least, that was great. And so we did meet one thing that I thought was really funny, but I don't know what that man's name is. I'm so horrible with this. There is a song about ending the Fed, and you might know who this guy is.
Oh.
Okay, now,
Okay,
so he's singing it, and I guess he's from California. I'm not sure. He performed the song, and during one of his song performances, we had 7 fire trucks drive by us.
7.
To go down
up our
street.
Yeah,
when we were in front of the Federal Reserve, we got to the Federal Reserve. You know, there are some men.
It was bad.
It was so bad. We were just like, listen to this poor guy play, and he had a raspy voice from something or other. I don't know what it was, but so he's kind of trying to belt it out, you know, on this little podium for everybody, and people were singing along. And here comes one fire truck, and we go, "Oh man, that stinks. Who's hurt?" Here comes another fire truck. Oh. What's happening? You know, something's going to blow up, you know? And then here comes 3, 4, 5, I think, 6 or 7 fire trucks.
I think it was 7,
and
yeah.
And Dean, you went down the street, didn't
Ryan
you?
Ryan and I actually went down the street. I was like, let's go down there and see what happened. And apparently there was a building just literally up the street, so a block above it, where there was all the fire trucks were parked, and the firemen were literally scratching their butt, you know, just kind of like, what's going on? Like, and so we kind of walked in front of the building directly, and I mm-hmm. went up to him, and I was like, what's going on? Is it a false alarm? And he's like, looks like it.
Yeah, so
there was absolutely nothing going on in that
yeah.
building.
I mean, if they had to send fire trucks by, send them by when someone's speaking, and maybe not this poor guy is trying to sing a cool song, yeah. you know what I'm saying?
Or maybe even a disgruntled person living in the building who, like, pulled a fire alarm because he was disgruntled about the fact that, hey, guess what, you live next to the world's most awful institution. He's obviously not happy when he found that out.
Yeah, you know.
The biggest swindle.
Do you feel that the people who are listening all have a pretty good idea what the Fed is? Do you want me to read something real
no,
quick?
No, feel free. You know, because I have a mixed bag. Most of the people who listen to the live show mm-hmm. are people who are in the know.
Okay.
The people I have, but I have, like I just talked about it recently, I have 4,000 downloads on one of my most recent podcasts. So there's a lot of people who are listening to what we're saying, but they're not. It's not converting into actual live listeners.
Okay.
But this is going to be podcast, so feel free. Yeah.
Okay. I have a little flyer here, and on the back it, I think this was someone was given to me for the Washington DC one,
mm-hmm.
but it says here, this little blurb, kind of a quick blurb about the Federal Reserve. On the night of November 22nd, 1910, a delegation of the nation's leading financiers left for Jekyll Island for a secret meeting to write the Federal Reserve Act. So began the dark conception of the Federal Reserve System, a creature which is responsible for devouring the political and financial wealth of America. The U.S. dollar has seen a 98% decline in its purchasing power since the time of that meeting. So, I mean, it's horrible. Okay, and then a quote from G. Edward Griffin, who wrote the book The Creature from Jekyll Island, which is a really great book, and so far it's kind of sad. I've only gotten through, like, the first quarter of the book, but I've skipped through it a lot and highlighted. A quote he has is, "The purpose of this meeting on Jekyll Island was to come to an agreement on the structure and operation of a banking cartel." A banking cartel. Keep that in mind, people. This is not something linked to our government initially. "The goal of the cartel, as is true with all of them, was to maximize profits by minimizing competition between members, to make it difficult for new competitors to enter the field, and to utilize the police power of government to enforce the cartel agreement. On November 22nd, 2008, 98 years later,
There will be rallies at every Federal Reserve Bank and office in the country. We will demand an end to private banker control over the nation's money supply and the return to a hard commodity-backed monetary system. And our slogan is simple and direct, End the Fed, Sound Money for America. And then it goes on just real briefly to talk about H.R. 2755, which is something Ron Paul put into the House, I'm thinking about a year ago. I don't know why I'm thinking that. And it's not really gone through much thought as far as, you know, going into committees and being discussed. I know it's getting a lot of people looking at it, but the goal, as when Ryan called earlier, what's up, Ryan? sorry. He's so awesome. I was saying something about one of his signs, the sign that he made for the protest we went to. Anyways, but by January, again, 19th or 22nd, I can't remember the date, they're trying to have the goal of 1 million signatures of this, you know, to uplift H.R. 2755 and, mm-hmm. you know, try to abolish the Federal Reserve Act.
Yeah.
So, anywho.
Yeah. You know, I really, really hope it happens. But at the same time, I'm a little frightened because, bills do. I don't know how, even if they were to abolish the Fed, I don't see how they're going to pay back the money.
Oh, I know. Because there's enough money in circulation our country to pay off the debt that we owe.
Yeah. I was giving an example to somebody at a store last night, actually. I got into a conversation with the guy behind the counter, and I said, you know, he said, yeah, and the Federal Reserve, and they're giving all these bailouts and stuff like that. And I said, I took the opportunity, you know, because everyone's talking about the bailouts, right?
Yeah.
So I'm all, you know how the Federal Reserve works? I said, let me teach this to you real quick. You know, I hope it's not too much, you know, troubling. He's all, no, go ahead. So I said, here's a dollar. And I say, now, say I'm the Federal Reserve. I print this dollar, and I give this dollar to you, and I say, okay, here's a dollar. You can do whatever you want with it. Okay, you're the government, by the way. Now, here's your dollar. Now, I want that dollar back, and I want it with interest.
Yeah.
But it has to be in dollars. Yeah. We got a call coming in.
Hey.
Caller, you're on the air.
Yes. I think there's some points that maybe might be overlooked in this discussion of the Fed and what constitutes a meaningful campaign to educate people. You all sound very young. Can I poll the approximate ages of the participants in this?
Yes, sure. Yes.
She wants to poll.
Take a guess.
She wants you to guess, bro.
Well, I'm figuring you're all to be in your 20s.
I'm 29.
Okay.
And you are?
29.
And
28.
28. So 28, 29, and 29.
Right, that exciting time when we're about to become 30.
All right, a little more mature than I had thought, but probably not old enough to remember the 60s and the 70s, as I am.
No, definitely not old enough for that.
Probably not old enough to remember the origins of things like street theater and giant puppets and mass demonstrations during the 60s.
No, definitely not. Though I wish I was there sometimes.
I'm writing it down. I'm riveted. Street theater.
Well, it kind of gives me a different perspective on it, maybe more jaundiced perspective on it. I think one thing that you need to point out is that you don't want to fetishize the Federal Reserve in particular,
right?
Which is just a manifestation of the whole phenomenon of fractional reserve banking and fiat money, mm-hmm. which is much, much, much older than the mm-hmm. Federal Reserve, mm-hmm. predates 1913, mm-hmm. which is when the Fed was brought in. In a sense, the demonstrators in Washington who were protesting the World Bank were protesting an institution that represents the extension of the same methods embodied by the Federal Reserve to the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
So one can't really approach the current collapse of the dollar, disintegration of the American economy, the complete outsourcing of all of our productive manufacturing infrastructure, now the layoffs, the default on things like pensions and healthcare payments that were contracted generations ago
mm-hmm.
in many cases. You know, we are talking about contracts here that essentially are being torn up, much as those treaties with the Indians were torn up.
Mm-hmm.
That is to say, you can turn on TV over the last few days and, you know, watch CNN or Fox interviewing an auto worker at a GM plant or a Chrysler plant or a retired auto worker talking about how essentially he stands to lose everything. And much of what he thinks he has are things that were signed into contracts, as I say, going back generations even.
Mm-hmm.
All that is now about to be swept aside. And so the process we're looking at is much, much, much bigger than just a question of, well, do we want a gold standard or what do we want to do to the Federal Reserve? That's one point that needs to be made.
Oh, yeah,
The other thing is this sort of hardcore aspect of what you're up against. You might just as well consider what the citizens of Cook County, Illinois, would have thought in terms of how do we restore the free markets and honest government to 1920s and 1930s Chicago, knowing that the judges, the mayor, the city council, indeed the region, is politically dominated by the Al Capone organization. In a sense, this is also what you're up against. Mm-hmm. These are gangsters.
Gangsters, yeah. Thank God you said that.
The rule of law means nothing to them.
Right.
Now, that doesn't mean that, of course, it doesn't mean that we're in any position to simply march out and militarily confront these people. We obviously don't have the resources to do that at this time. And pending that, of course, things like peaceful demonstrations, sit-ins, street theater, the kinds of tactics that you're discussing were employed in San Francisco at the recent anti-Fed protests, have an important educational purpose.
Amen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was just going to say, actually, because Carl just a little bit ago started to say something about he's not exactly sure, you know, what this abolishment of the Federal Reserve... I'm sorry, did you kind of... Were you starting to say that
you weren't sure
if it was going to actually happen or not?
Well, not so much if it's going to happen. What would the effects of that would be? Because, I was even saying that, you know, just abolishing the Fed is not the only step.
Right.
And we do have bills due, and people are... You know what I'm saying? There are other things around it, like this gentleman's saying, and I just don't know if that's going to play into the hands of the power or not. I don't know if that's really the ultimate answer. It just get rid of the Fed and all of a sudden we're able to have freedom. I don't think that's going
to
be it.
When you started to say that, it made me want to go into the point, of course we digressed into something else, I guess.
Right.
It made me want to go into the point that this is a very, very noble thing, and I think it's an amazing way, just like street theater, just like all the other, you know, radio shows, any sort of way to get the information out to people, whether or not H.R. 2755 actually passes, I mean, this is if we can make this movement big, it'll be just another one of the ways, sir, that we can, you know, teach people about what's going on. It's just one of the many pieces of the puzzle.
Right.
And through this, you know, through the Federal Reserve information, we can branch people off into so much more info. And realizing the monster, what they might have to, you know, prepare themselves for,
mm-hmm.
Ideas for everybody creating their own community. Like at Farmer's Market last Sunday, I asked one of the guys, who's my favorite vendor there, I said, would you ever consider taking silver coins? And that got his brain working on it. So, I mean, it's just we really got to keep our minds open and kind of think of all the different ways that we can kind of deal with this.
Yeah, sir, I'll have a question for you. You know, being that you seem to be very knowledgeable and you definitely have a bigger perspective than just this focused issue, what is it that you would think would be the most appropriate way to attack this beast? I mean, right now we're basically talking about one of the tentacles on an octopus. What would we have to do to strike a blow to the heart of this beast?
Well, I suppose, you know, my limitation is that in the sense I'm coming from a preoccupation with issues that, well, for example, the Mumbai bombing of the last week, or the truck bombings that took place in Iraq today, which increasingly these kinds of incidents are being used as a pretext to expand global gangsterism
mm-hmm.
as a way of advancing the Fed's, the beast's agenda. I like that term, the way you use that, the beast. That does describe it. of necessity, speaking for me personally, I spend a lot of time talking about false flag terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
And in particular with respect to 9/11, I feel it sweeps away illusions that people have. Don't get me wrong on this. I don't want to belittle legislative campaigns. Even in the most corrupted, bought-off legislature or Congress, campaigns to pass laws are still meaningful, useful ways to organize, to gather together your forces, to educate masses of people, and to develop cadres.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say full-time organizers because we all have economic constraints to deal with, but people who are committed, people who are really going to do their homework and read about this stuff. In that sense, I think that you guys really should think about your target audience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to me, what you're doing with the Fed is great because I call it target acquisition.
Mm-hmm.
the kinds of disruptions in people's lives that we're going to be seeing are just going to become more and more dramatic. I guess you've seen the latest layoff figures. I mean, the economy's in free fall at this point.
Right.
We're going to see the decay of the dollar. There's going to be an attempt to artificially deflate the prices of commodities in the United States in order to make us cheaper to sell off to foreign investors.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a big part of this, the betrayal of things that we think of as traditionally American to foreign private interests that presumably will be coming in to collect tolls on our highways and take over our highways. Who knows? You know, they may even be talking about things like selling off national assets under the guise of, you know, they'll say it's privatization, but really they'll be selling them to these sovereign wealth funds that more often than not are controlled by actual governments, like the sheikdoms in the Gulf. So
right.
Your target audience for me is people who is more even so than say the campuses, which I think is the kind of people you're recruiting mostly to come to the march. I would devote more resources to targeting active duty and reserve military personnel and their families.
Mm-hmm.
They're the people that need to get the institutions like the Fed in their bullseye. Do you know what I mean? So that they will understand who is behind this economic catastrophe, who is to be held responsible for it, who is to blame for it, and tie the Fed together into the larger complex of political, social, ideological, and especially cultural control. Point out the control over the media that is exercised by these same institutions that essentially run the Fed. And point out, of course, that most of the banks that run the Fed are, in effect, foreign banks. They're not even American banks. So I'm not saying we necessarily, I know you libertarians are not real comfortable making cheap appeals to collectivist ideologies like nationalism, but let's face it, if the country's been sold down the river, if traditions that we Americans value as sacred have been spat upon and disgraced and sold to the highest bidder by men like Henry Paulson and the guys that run the Federal Reserve, I'm thinking of Greenspan, right?
Right.
You know, figures like this. I mean, put faces and names on these people. Identify for people who this corrupt elite is, and clarify them for them the fact that these people are traitors to what it means to be an American, which to me is about freedom.
Right. Absolutely.
And I think you're on the right track as far as that goes. It's a question of taking the resources you've got. And directing them in the most effective way, directing them in ways that are within the scope and the scale of your means. You don't have the military means to take these guys on, but you do have the means to begin arraying those forces that may ultimately take those steps. And I think you're really thinking about this stuff. I love the creativity I'm hearing here. I love the positive attitude and especially the commitment to education and studying and bringing this information to people. I really appreciate it.
All right.
Let me let you go.
All right. Thanks, bro. I really appreciate your call. That was a lot of good insight, and I hope you call again.
Good information.
All right, man. Yeah, that was really good.
That's a lot of good information. Awesome.
Yeah. You know, I want to read something real quick. It's something that was done by, you know, and I think that when you're talking about the Fed, this is, sometimes I wish this got more attention. Because to me, it is, like, you know, the basic, you know, I've gotten into arguments with people before about the fact that the Fed is private. I've even gotten to pick, you know, the broader picture about the, you know, the Bank of England and its involvement in the whole thing,
right,
owned by foreign, country. I've gotten into so many different things, and it just doesn't seem to really get people. It doesn't really seem to grab them and make them concerned. They just kind of go, oh, well. Because right now, as it is, every morning they're having a latte from Starbucks.
Yep.
You know, they have nice, clean clothes on. They go to work in an air-conditioned office, and they drive a car, sometimes an Escalade even,
yeah,
or a Hummer, to and from work. And to them, it just doesn't, you know, as long as they're, it hasn't hit home yet, the devastating effects this could have on their own personal life. And sometimes it's a shame that sometimes you can't point out other people's devastating effects and draw concern from them. But this is something that I said to somebody, and it made them think.
Really?
And I think it came from G.F. Edward Griffin from his book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. And he said, let's see. The Federal Reserve's job is to stabilize the economy. So let's give it a report card, shall we?
Nice. I've heard this.
And he goes, okay, let's let the... Okay. La, 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 la. Okay, so let's see how they've done stabilizing the economy. Since it was created in 1913, the Federal Reserve System has presided over the crashes of 1921 and 1929, the Great Depression of 1929 through 1939, recessions in the year 1953, 57, 69, 75, and 81, and a stock market Black Monday in 1987. We all know that corporate debt is soaring, personal debt is greater than ever before, both business and personal bankruptcies are at all-time highs. Banks and savings and loan associations have failed in greater numbers than ever before in our history. Interest, and that was, this is prior to the recent economic woes, by the way. Interest on the national debt now consume half of all of our tax dollars. Heavy industry has all but been replaced by overseas competition. We are facing an international trade deficit for the first time in our history. 75% of downtown Los Angeles and other metropolitan areas are now owned by foreigners, and over half of the nation is now officially in a state of recession.
Nice.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Not so good.
Yeah. And now, you know what I'm saying? And this is all not because passing. Of running on the banks that happened at the very beginning of the century. And it's baffling.
It is baffling.
It's amazing. And, you know, it brings me to one of my favorite quotes by George Washington. And we'll go to a break here in just a second so we can get some coffee in us. And,
yeah.
But he said it's a marvel what burdens citizens will submit to by their governments. It's just an amazing thing. People will submit to these burdens placed upon them, and to the point of nearly breaking their back.
Yeah.
It's like, I wonder what it takes for people to wake up. You know, what information do we have to? And I guess that's the big thing. It's sad thing to think of the huge obstacle we have in facing something like the Federal Reserve in the United States. But then he brings up things like the World Bank, mm-hmm. you know, International Monetary Fund, you know, the things that are going on a global scale. It's a tentacle on a bigger octopus. You know what I'm saying?
Definitely.
It's one layer of the problem. And when you look at it from the global perspective, it just seems so overwhelming.
Yeah.
You know, and he's right. You know, it's good that we're tackling something.
Right.
One thing at a time, you know,
It seems as though some people, that's all they can take. I mean, a lot of people have heard the analogy where there's the frog in the boiling pot of water. It doesn't jump out right till it's frickin' scalded, you know?
Right.
We also have, an agenda set forth by these people who are messing our world up to get us to not pay attention to it. They make us look like conspiracy theorists, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's hard to bring this all up to someone at once. I mean, bringing up the Federal Reserve is great. Bringing up, you know, the IMF at certain points, or I mean, it's really interesting. My sister, one thing I want to say, the bailouts. Right when that first one was being put through, I was at the house with my mom and my sister, and I said to both of them, "Do you guys realize what is happening to us? I mean, do you realize what they're doing?" And and I explained, you know, this bailout and the money and the Federal Reserve and all the how much they're going to end up having to print. She says, "Well, that's okay. You know, they could just print more money. The more money that they print, the more money we'll have, and we can just pay it off." And I'm like, "But that is an inflation. It's just hard to explain to people. They still don't get it. We're not taught in schools.
Right.
We're taught the opposite in schools, not necessarily on this, but other issues. I mean, we've really, the information that they've fed to us on purpose to get us to believe a certain way.
You know, I did a teaching. I'm going to be doing another teaching here pretty soon. I haven't figured out when, but one of the analogies I like to give is that if you take somebody, like take three people, you know, and I am the banker. And, you know, basically I give you 2 cents and I give you 2 cents. You're equal now. You're on an equal playing field and you guys are buying and selling. Your job is to buy this from him. This job is to buy that from there. Okay, but don't do it yet. And then I go up and I say, okay, look over there real quick. And when they're not looking, I give a couple more dollars to the person on the right. And I say, okay, now turn and look at each other. How much are you going to ask for that item?
Wow, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because that's when they get it. They go, you know, okay, they I would ask more because they have more money.
Right.
Which means prices are going up. Prices are going up. We have more money. You know what I'm saying? And I keep explaining that to him. When you inflate, prices go up. Not only does the value of your, it's not that the value, you know, the prices aren't just going up, it's the devaluation of the dollar.
Yeah.
The value of the two have now become lesser because there's four.
Yep.
You know, and I try to explain the concept that way, but we're going to go to a break here and have some coffee. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
Yeah. うるせえガキども騒いでいやがるいつか大物になんのかねYeah, you won't catch me saying God
bless America. I left the states, then to God bless America. You in a catacomb, they moving Israel to Arizona. Microchip the Rockefeller type of shit. You like the shit cause you don't like to sit and read about things. You rather sit and stew like baby Griffin, another baby missing. Got you shook, got you scared, got you acting like a puppet. Like Kermit, you better get your gun permit, my dude. And I hate that expression, that might be my age showing. But when I write, I leave the page glowing. Unlike the windowless mausoleum where the skull and bones meet, they want us not to see them. True dodges, I stay away from my son. It lodges, their faces can make me nauseous. They're basically making me cautious. Now your gun's clapping, and you want some ultra shit. But when it comes to change, you don't want to make it happen. Bankers, lawyers, distrust, paranoias. You think you're thinking, but you're not, they can destroy us. InfoWars are intercepted, living on a prison planet, living in satanic times with the fuck it. Laugh it off, laugh at Alex Jones, laugh at Aaron Russo, but I'm too smart to do so. Yeah. You're telling me to think outside the box, I'm clever. Are you to use a phrase that's been around for life forever? And since you use that, it only proves that you can't do that. You need some years of school back. It's so cliche. You're too busy being in the building to join me in building a better future for our children. We on the same page. What a lame phrase. What a cop out. What a way to walk out with a mental block out. It is what it is. Say that bullshit cliche. Try to raise your kids. Fuck serving the fiends. Y'all too big for your britches. True religion better make maternity jeans. We perfectly clean. Y'all dirty motherfuckers never pass inspection. I keep you nerds running like a class election. Your face be fixed like the last election. My blood boils like gunfurs with a staph infection. Well, y'all bounce, I make a beautiful killing. I stay in disguise like a Scooby-Doo villain. I'm musically illin'. Never ask why I rip that scrubs. Victory don't repeat itself. History does. My name is Esoteric. I make beats and I rock too. I rock rhymes, motherfucker, I'ma rock you.
That's where the heat is.
Seven Elf and Esoteric, Godless America. Check it out, Google it, it's a great song. One of my favorite quotes on there is, he goes, you may laugh at Alex Jones, laugh at Aaron Russo, but I'm too smart to do so.
Nice.
Love that verse, man, still. You know, because we sound crazy sometimes to people. I admit that. You know, when I first started hearing this stuff, I thought it was just crazy. You know? But it's not crazy. If you look at it from the perspective that, you know, there are people in this world who are just doing for self. And, you know, and you can see that. I mean, I come up from a neighborhood that was not so nice. And, you know, there was a lot of people. There's people out there, fools would sell crack to their mom to make money.
Yeah.
Like, the level of disgust that I have for people like that is just unfathomable, but they exist. And, you know, they're always plotting and scheming to get into positions of power for the benefit of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Me, I think that even goes beyond that. The people who are currently in control, like he was talking about, like the real root of everything. You know, I if you do some research, and I'm just going to throw this out there for anybody who wants to research it, but do research on the history of usury, because I think banking isn't so much an issue as much as banking with interest.
Mm-hmm.
It was the plight or the scheme, if you would say, of usury that allowed people to take people's money and start manipulating, and it provoked a whole movement of, you know, people trying to find out ways to manipulate society and take from those who have it. And one of the first organizations, other than the Jews, that were allowed to do it, because it used to be considered a sin to do, was this group called the Knights Templar, which were supposed to be the predecessors to the Freemasons. And they're the ones that founded many of the things called local banking. The thing that they found was a loophole. Instead of calling it usury or something or interest, what they would call it is rent, because they had huge tracts of land and they were able to, quote, rent the rental space in order for you to store your wealth.
Wow.
So they were able to find a loophole that would allow them to do usury on the people's wealth. And they were able to accumulate huge amounts of wealth. So that's definitely one little note there. Also look into people like J.P. Morgan. J.P. Morgan, Rockefeller, Rothschilds. Look into their associations, who they're associated with, people in the banking industry, the people who actually attended the meeting in Jekyll Island that founded the Federal Reserve. Look into... Not, you know, they call them secret societies. I call them fraternal societies. Secret societies is a little too, extreme. They weren't secret. People knew they existed. Their membership wasn't secret. Huh. But the goal and intent of the organization was a secret. But these fraternal organizations like Phi Beta Kappa or something, I think I'm trying to remember what the name of them are. But if you look it up, there's some really, really old school fraternal organizations that many of the most powerful people in banking and commerce in general were involved in, and not to mention political leaders, religious leaders, all part of the same organization.
Right, right.
The one that J.P. Morgan belonged to had an all-seeing eye and a number of other occult symbols as the symbol for the fraternity. Don't have the information with me, but if you do your research, you'll find out. And so, you know, I talk about often, I had this, the last couple of shows I've done that's been on the Freemasons and on the occult societies and the agenda, and I believe this idea of world government and the acquisition of power from the primitive masses of people is basically being done by a group of people who literally believe they are further evolved than the rest of society.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, it's funny that when you get into the seats of power, you always look around and you can see these symbols and these associations everywhere.
Wow.
It's almost without any kind of gap. They're all associated through one branch or another. It's not one specific group. Several groups with the same doctrine and philosophic belief. I'll leave it at that. I won't go too farther into that. Maybe in the future I'm going to keep going down my Masonic and Mystery School tradition road that I've been on for the people who are regular listeners to the show. And I'll definitely get to the banking interests when we get through the basic philosophy of the mystery cults. So anyways, I think that they all go hand in hand. I mean, the philosophy is basically the drive, and that's what I'm interested in. But you said you had something you wanted to share. We only have, just so you know, we have about 30 minutes left before the end of the show, so
okay. If
there's anything you want to get in, feel free.
One thing I did want to mention, for those of you who are in maybe Central or Northern California, there is a John Birch Society 50th anniversary banquet this Saturday, December 6th, in Sacramento at the DoubleTree Hotel, and there are two people speaking. One person speaking is the John Birch Society president, John McManus. And he's going to be talking about saving the dollar, jobs, and freedom, a no-nonsense look at economic realities.
Mm.
And actually, I have his whole transcript of what he's going to be talking about with me, but I have yet to read it. So I'm looking forward to that this weekend. He's a really nice guy. There's also William F. Jasper, and he's senior editor of the New American Magazine, which is the magazine for the John Birch Society. And, you know, some people... I'm not going to go into that. Anywho. Okay. His topic is the misguided war on terror, and that was very interesting. I was in Appleton, Wisconsin in October and heard him speak about that, and it's very interesting. It was kind of an abbreviated version of probably what I will hear this Saturday. So, again, for those of you interested, if you just go to the jbs.org website, the John Birch Society has been around since 1958. I'm not going to go into it so much, but... they've been through a lot, you know, people infiltrating, people trying to give them a bad name, and I'm really, really impressed with some of the very, you know, initial core values and what the founder, Robert Welch, said was going to happen to this country is happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, some of the things that have already happened are in the process of happening. So, anywho, it's a really great organization to check out. Ron Paul, if you guys dig Ron Paul, is on their Speakers Bureau, JBS Speakers Bureau. So if you go to jbs.org and look under their, you look under Action and then Events, I believe, you could find that. It's this Saturday, December 6th, in Sacramento, and you have to kind of call, either call or email ahead, I believe, and say you're coming, because I'm not paying until I get there, actually. So I'm just one of those wait-till-last-moment kind of people. That's going to be really nice.
That's awesome.
One thing that I wanted to mention is Dina and I, we've known each other since high school, and we've worked together in little mini organizations in high school and on up, kind of. So we...
are trying to get groups of people together in the local area that we live in on the central coast of California. And there are already in existence a meetup, or there is in existence Campaign for Liberty meetup group, which I am now the head of because someone was kind of wanting to pass that to someone else. So I took that up. If you go to meetup and you would like to actually join I've also added on the John Birch Society meetup because that's another way for people who are interested in JBS to meet with us. I put pretty much the same events that we do on both of those meetup groups. If you want, if you go to www.jbs.meetup.com, regardless of where you live in the country, you can just put in your zip code and they will find for you the closest JBS meetup group.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a member of JBS, but I don't have anything against it. I just choose not to involve myself in associations,
right.
But I do support them. I have definitely donated money to various causes, and I know several JBSers, and
yeah.
You know, good guys. Everybody that I know is good guys. So definitely get involved with those who are on your side. If you think that the Fed should be abolished, you might want to get involved with them because they are definitely like major power in the movement.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're doing a lot of things, and yeah, I think it would be great if you guys would look into them at least. Not saying you should join, just saying you should look into.
That's a very interesting point you put forward. Yeah, they do have good information, regardless of whether you join or not. You can have that at your disposal by going to their website or one other thing. Deanie and I do have a Facebook. If you just put in Brushfires of Freedom in the Facebook search thing up at the upper right hand part of Facebook, then you could find us. We just kind of started that. In fact, if you go to it, we're the only two in the group.
Well, we're trying to really focus on reaching young people who maybe haven't even left for college yet, who are still, in their last couple of years of high school, and trying to get them to have sort of a little bit more focus with all the energy that they seem to have. Seems like young people are kind of a little bit aware. They're sort of disgruntled. Like, that's their natural God-given thing to do, is to be disgruntled about the system and everything.
We remember.
Yeah, we kind of remember that. But so we're trying to sort of funnel that energy and find a way to get young people involved. So that's kind of what Brushfires of Freedom is. And it'll be a meeting of sorts with documentaries and activism, like real, going out and doing something active, and then along with just kind of maybe working on some art projects, whether it's like a song that's about this kind of stuff, or just trying to get people involved with something artistic too, to try and get all the different kinds of people to get their brain on this kind of work, you care and you're a musician. Well, why not bring it together? Write songs about what you care about?
Do what you do good, but do it for the cause.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's trying to get those, there's a lot of young people really working on music in Santa Maria and in Napomo and just in the Central Coast. So we're just trying to get those people involved with the movement. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And educate yourself on the Fed. There's several great websites out there. G. Edward Griffin, if you look up his name, you'll find several sources of information about him. He does a great job teaching some of the complex issues and dealing with the economics. I mean, I'm no economist myself, but I think I got a lot. It's funny because I've had conversations with people who think that they know everything about the economy because they graduated with a degree for business administration or something like that, and it's funny because you get in these conversations and there's some basic primitive economic concepts that you learn through G. Edward Griffin that they don't even know.
Right.
It's no wonder that they don't really get it, because as much as they try to I've gotten into a conversation with somebody before who was a USC graduate in business, and he basically he stopped me in the middle of something I was saying about the Federal Reserve and tried to give me the whole speech on the theoretical basket of goods.
What?
The theoretical basket of goods. If you put, you start going through there's this thing that they teach, the way they teach these concepts, but it's absent any of the more essential information, especially involving how economics actually works, what a dollar actually is.
Right.
They don't get in any of that stuff. So
yeah.
My favorite source is G. Edward Griffin.
I'm sorry, what are you saying exactly? G. R. Griffin?
G. Edward Griffin.
Okay.
Or Edward G. Griffin.
It's G. Edward Griffin.
G. Edward, that's what I thought, yeah. And there's also, I'm trying to remember his name. Don't remember right now. Just a heads up, I just wanted to do this. I don't like throwing out stuff and not really giving you a source of information. The J.P. Morgan was with Delta Phi Fraternity and Delta Kappa Epsilon. The Delta Kappa Epsilon actually has the symbol for the sun god Ra. It has an all-seeing eye emanating light at the top, and a number of other things. You can look into that. The Delta Phi, which I find ironic, actually has the Maltese cross as their symbol, which is the same cross used by the Knights Templar who founded the banking system, ironically. So anyways, that's just something to take into consideration. Feel free to do your research.
Yeah, and if you are researching it, also try and research where the actual birth of college fraternities came from, because it's pretty much the same one, which is the Skulls and Bones fraternity. It was like one of the first ones that, whatever the name really is, I don't know if that's what it's really called. I guess that's what people think it's called.
But right. It's then, funny because a lot of these fraternities started around the same time our country started.
Yeah.
And they all had similar associations, which is very suspicious.
Right.
But
well, corruption anyways. Has been... I mean, regardless of having, as I said before, and we all agree, a great framework, the Constitution, everything, there's been corruption in this country since its inception.
Right.
So, I mean, it's so fascinating. You can't have a system without corruption, without, right. Well, I'm not saying you can't, I'm sorry, but there's always that possibility of it. And I think that there's a Proofs of Conspiracy book.
Yeah.
I have not read that yet, but it was written in 1798 by someone who I cannot recall his name. And he was, you know, giving information in this book, as far as I know, about, you know, the beginning of the country and the evidence of conspiracy dating, you know, from England and different areas like that. And I mean, it's very interesting, but I mean, there's so much information for people to get, and we have stuff we need to focus on and do, kids.
Right.
I mean, it's time to
Get active. If you know, I always say, you know, it's the real root of the issue, in my opinion, and it's just my opinion, is that it goes down to a basic philosophic level. People's philosophy on life, and there are certain people with a certain philosophy who are pursuing goals and agendas that are not necessarily in the benefit of everybody, even though they proclaim them to be.
Right.
And, you know, I always say, you got to do your research, you got to learn what this is all about. I mean, on a surface level, they're welcome to have their philosophic beliefs, but as soon as their beliefs start affecting my life in a way that I didn't vote for or have a say in, I'm going to have a problem. They're welcome to do whatever it is they want to do. But when they start using and taxing me without my knowledge or understanding through the system of inflation, I have a problem with that.
Right.
That's when it's time to get active. You don't have to wait to understand everything about that to know that it's just wrong in essence.
Right.
And, you know, and we may have disagreements on what causes it. We may have disagreements on the best way to deal with it. But do something. I don't care what it is. If it's just handing out flyers door to door, if it's staying on the corner dressed as a bird with a giant sign to get people's attention, do it. I don't care. Do something. Don't just sit there and do nothing. By doing nothing, I can guarantee one thing will happen. Nothing will change.
Right.
Unless it's changing more in the direction of which is already affecting you in a negative way.
Just coming back to what I was saying about young people and everything, I mean, I don't know how often a sort of younger person party has turned into like a YouTube fest. So, you know, seek out the clips that are interesting to you to just randomly, your friends are sitting there watching, you know, Jackass or what have you, then all of a sudden you throw on a certain clip of something, even if it's funny, like, Jon Stewart actually interviewed Greenspan. So
right, that was great.
Go find it.
Yeah.
Everybody,
watch that.
I cling to that kind of funny stuff sometimes when I don't know where else to turn. And it was so funny to hear him, sort of common sense, you know, Jon Stewart saying to him, well, I don't understand. You're rewarding the rich and you're, you know, punishing the poor. You know, just kind of flat out. So find that kind of stuff. Show it to your friends and see what they think. You know, some of them, you know, have some faith in Jon Stewart. Or find your favorite South Park, you know, but find a way to sort of keep bringing it back to that, because people are waking up.
Right.
They
and,
really
you know,
are.
There is no excuses these days. I mean, we have email lists. You can email people. I do it.
I like that. There's no excuses these
there's
days.
No excuses.
There's
you
no
can't
excuse.
Say, you know, grandma lives back in Florida and I don't have enough gas money. Like, you don't have to have gas money to get all the way to Florida. You can call on the phone.
There are.
And there are several very inexpensive options out there. Mm-hmm. You can send a letter with information in it. There's so much at everyone's fingertips. And I would venture to guess, if you're listening to the show, you have a computer. Because everybody is broadcasted over the internet. So, you know, if you have a computer, you have no excuses. There's several places. And if you don't know any of those places, come to my website and I'll give you some ideas and I'll give you some resources. Shit, I'll make you a flyer. But my admin, my
Kyle's gonna make that.
So you have no excuses. You know, you can't get a printer. Go to, you know, use the corporate printing company. What is it? You know, what's
I thought you were talking about. No, I do it at work. Don't you know? Tell, sorry, I use my copier. Work.
Do it wherever you can. Borrow a friend's.
Don't tell.
So you know the my email is admin admin at truthlovefreedom.org. That's admin at truthlovefreedom.org. No excuses.
And also, I would just wanted to say to listeners from wherever else in the country who aren't in the Central Coast, if you keep tuned, you know, keep tuned into Brushfires of Freedom on Facebook, or try and find us and connect with us personally. We're trying to really devise a way to do exactly what Carl's saying, which is to find the younger people too that have the energy, but actually think of what they could do first and engage them and sort of give them the tasks, if you will. Yeah. And a lot of them, they're anxious to do stuff. During the elections, we had a lot of activity and just trying to actually, you know, get people to engage in that kind of stuff. We're going to be coming up with ideas for creative projects as well as actual activism projects and just how to reach out to people who are, you know, in high school and out of high school, kind of that age group, I guess, is sort of what we're targeting.
Well, what's really fun is in a respectful way and a total renegade way, you know, making amazing flyers, things you can pass out to your neighbors, hey, neighbor, I'm just really concerned about this, and I'm hoping that you'll want to read this. And make it a personal thing to the people that live around your neighborhood. And, you know, this is such an in-depth thing, and it's, okay, we need to get back to paying attention to each other and being, you know, making friendships, being friendly, saying hello to people on the street. I mean, that's like a core thing. People are just not connecting with each other. There's this whole, like, it's like the dogs with the cones that they put around their neck, you know what I'm saying, so they don't scratch themselves. I mean, people are walking around with this selfish, I'm sorry, I shouldn't be so cruel. Anyways, I mean, just focused on their clothes, focused on certain things about life that are just not important. I mean, it's devaluing the way we live and the way we interact with people. And if you just, just smile at someone, holy shnikes, it's amazing, you know? I cleaned some lady's teeth the other day, and I gave her a loaf of bread, and she just about cried. I mean, like, just do little things for people. But then also, I mean, so focus on the friendly things to do with people. And then, you know, reach out to your neighbors, flyer up your areas, and just, you know, put real cool websites, put bumper stickers on your car. Try to not look too insane.
Right.
And don't aggravate the police too much, because you don't want to get... Well, anyways, never mind.
I think you should aggravate the police.
I totally agree, actually. No.
I'm okay with that
idea.
That's
actually kind of a fun thing to do. Yeah. But no, I didn't know. Yeah.
But no, there is no excuses these days. There are so many ways to get involved. And, you know, even if you're not going to do the Fed thing, you know, maybe you think it's a lost cause. There's, you know, what is it? The war in Iraq. There's truth about 9/11. There's, you know, the ITF, the World Bank, what it's doing to third world countries. I mean, I can go down a list of things that are just egregious and can use somebody getting involved in. I mean, something as simple as the Buy Nothing Day. There's this group that's, I'm trying to remember what it's called.
Whoa.
I'm trying to remember. You know what I was talking about?
Wait, no. Never mind. I don't know.
Anyways, there's a website that basically it's funny that they did this on Black Friday. I wish they would have did it on another day. Probably a lot more effective. But Black Friday is the biggest shopping day of the year, and their thing is they want to do Buy Nothing Day. And every year they put a commercial on. A couple years ago, we put some money into a commercial and showed a pig. The United States has a pig eating. It was really funny. Talking about the level of consumption in this country, you know, there's so many things that you can get involved in causes. The thing that I would recommend to everybody, though, is do your research about the cause and who's involved in the cause, and make sure you're not, because there are some causes out there these days that are not in your best interest. Let me tell you, most of the ones that are involving the United Nations and the so-called, you know, Agenda 21, and the environmentalist movement have been totally circumvented by, you know, the same people who are operating our banks and so on. So
right, it's taking your mind off of what's really important.
Right. You know, human life, definitely. Iraq war, definitely get involved in stuff like that. You know, even, you know, spreading information about the Federal Reserve and the economy. you know, getting involved in voting. And some people think it's not a good thing to vote. I think it is. I think that if you don't vote, basically what you're doing is saying, do whatever you want with my government.
Right, right.
If you vote, even though they may be corrupting the vote, you're still getting your vote in and saying, no, this is my damn vote.
Amen.
You need to assert yourself. This is my damn vote, and if you don't count it, I'm going to hold you accountable. And you know, that's how it starts. Doing nothing does nothing.
Exactly.
So all these people who tell you, you know, your vote doesn't count, don't participate in the system. Boycotting the system ain't going to do a damn thing. Half this country hasn't voted in years, and they're still corrupting the votes. They're still putting in their candidates, and that's not going to stop anything. Action stops things, so get active.
Yeah, I read something, too, about the vote, and it was talking about it was an article in one of the New Americans, the John Birch Society magazine, but it was really interesting because it was pretty well founded and documented, and they were saying that so many elections, whether it's for Prop 8 or for anything like that, are really just won by a small margin on both, you know, on either side, lost or won. So, I mean, what does that really mean? That really means that you can become a precinct leader and go out and just contact just the right amount of people. Really, it's really doable. You can go out there, move your feet, talk to people, and that small amount, that's 3%, for example, will actually change the vote, you know, literally. That's rocking the vote, actually, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
And then something else I wanted to say about what you were talking about earlier is, you know, in terms of, like, Buy Nothing Day and everything like that is, you know, just take it even a step further. You know, if you don't have time to research or you are coming up with an excuse, at least make all your gifts, you know, and think about what your money means so that you start to have that thought process. Where does your money lie? Does it lie in a bank or does it lie in a credit union? And why? What's the difference? And should you actually now jump ship from all the banks because they're all basically coming together to become just several big banks and just reinvest your money into credit unions and think about that. Even think about that this Christmas season and think about how can you make your own gifts and not support any economy that is just going awry.
Right.
Yeah.
Even on a more minor tip, where are you putting your money? You know, recently I switched from AT&T to Charter Cable for my phones and everything. I do nothing through AT&T now. Mm-hmm. And I'm sending them a letter to their CEO, and I'm saying the reason I left is because you participated in Bush's illegal spying program.
Amen.
And I'm never going to do business with you again until you come out with a public apology.
Yeah.
And basically, I'm one person, but if everybody was to do that, you know, enough people were to do that. I mean, my money, I mean, that's thousands of dollars they're going to lose this year because of me.
Yeah.
You know, and where are you putting your money? And, you know, when I talked to the people at Charter, I made it clear, if I find out anything like that, you guys are participating, anything like that, I'm out.
Fantastic.
I will have no internet. I don't give a damn. I'm not going to participate in my own, you know, imprisonment. I'm just not going to do it. I'm not going to support the system that is trying to take away my rights and my freedoms and my liberty. And even the most minor things like that, when done by the individual, isn't that big of a deal. But when it's done by groups of people, it's a big deal.
Right. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think about, hey, you know, I need to call, say, Lois Capps, which is a representative local with that, to us. They think I need to do this. I need to send a letter. I got to email them. Dude, put all the phone numbers. Like, I have Lois Capps in my mobile phone, and I have, like, maybe five of her numbers, plus her fax, so that when I'm at work, I can harass her. You know what I mean? But just keep that kind of stuff with you, so maybe when you're driving, you can put it on. If you're in California, you got to put it on a speakerphone or something like that, you know, and, you know, contact them and call Washington, D.C. as often as you can. Yeah. I mean, on your commute, I mean, put it into little bits, you know, record anti-war radio, you know, your podcast, I mean, anything like that. Listen to stuff, educate yourself. You can fit stuff in anywhere you need to, and it's enlightening. I feel actually freer working in this kind of movement than anything.
Yeah, it's empowering.
It is.
Yeah, you feel like, damn it, I'm a human being.
Yeah.
You know, like,
I mean, it makes you realize what your the natural rights, so important. I don't feel, I think of the American government, and I don't think, you know what, in my mind, they don't own me. There's no way they own me. They're so corrupt, it makes me want to poo my pants. So, rated G. Anyways, I did want to say just one real quick thing that in the Fed.us website, they have a 42-minute video that gives a description of the Federal Reserve and why it's not good. And and then again, the link to the H.R. 2755. Whether you do think that, you know, printing up the signature pages and getting signatures is important or not. You can use that. Stand out in front of Longs, Vons, wherever the heck you know you want to. Get signatures, but pass something out too. Use that as a moment to give more information to your community.
Right.
So.
Absolutely. Anything else you guys want to say?
Oh, I did want to say, if you are in the know, as Carl says, so to speak, just remember, too, that sometimes it's just be wise about how you start to sort of teach people about this kind of stuff. Because my cousin who lives in Texas, he actually taught me this, which is he kind of has the sort of, you know, a lot of interests that all fall under this kind of same category, like Ron, you know, we were listening to something about medicine and the medical profession, and we're talking about the end of Fed. There's all these different topics. So just think to yourself, what is most interesting to this person? So if you know somebody whose parents, are sick with cancer or something, then attack it from that direction. Or, you know what I mean? That sounds kind of a little crazy, but you really need to personalize this kind of stuff with people, because something will click, and then that's when the beginning of that person's, right. Like you say, enlightenment, I guess,
right.
Or whatever. I mean, we're not preaching, obviously, but I do think that you have to think about that. Like, how can you tailor something? Because then that will make sense to them, and that will be the beginning of their blue pill or whatever you call it.
Red pill.
Swallow the pill, kids!
Because you ask people that are in the so-called know, and they're like, oh, yeah, I started because of this, or because of Ron Paul, or because of the 9/11. So everybody has that sort of beginning storyline, too.
I mean, I've said things to people that years later they came around. Like, I remember having a conversation about the war in Iraq and what's going on, why we're in Iraq, to, like, a cousin of mine who was fighting me over it. Like, basically, supporting Bush and all that stuff. And now when I talk to him, it's like, you're right. Just now he talks like me. Yes, you know what I'm saying? And it's like, you plant seeds.
Definitely.
You have to plant seeds and ideas.
And they have to be personal.
Yeah, like, where does it affect you personally? You know, like, sometimes that you don't have to be so personal. You know, sometimes you do. Depends on the person. You know, I've definitely said things that are, just random, totally off-the-wall things that got people thinking.
That's true,
And so, you never know.
Especially at the grocery store.
I do. It's funny, because when I'm sitting at the checkout, man, I'm talking to people. I'm like, hey,
The people around here know you as a crazy Carl.
No, not around here.
That's good. Other places.
I definitely have certain people that I get to know me. I'm so round about things and planting seeds that I've kind of learned this technique where I just plant seeds. Yeah. And I let people know, if you're ever interested, let me know.
Yeah.
I let them come to me, because as soon as they say, yeah, I'm interested, then I know they're open to information. Otherwise, you're just wasting your breath.
Oh, yeah.
So I drop seeds of little incidental bits of information, and then I say, yeah, if you ever want to know any more about that, hit me up.
Yeah.
And then I'll pass them a DVD or something like that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But it's people I talk to on a regular basis like that. You know, people that I don't know, it's almost like a waste of breath to even talk to them. It seems like, for me, I get a lot more results from people that I know around me, family members, friends of friends, things
right,
like that.
Right.
My church, I went to a church for a while. I don't talk about my religion on the show, because it's just not something I'm interested in doing. But I did go to a church for a while, and I don't go to church anymore. But I did go to a church for a while, and, the first time I had a talk with the pastor there, and I told him, what's going on in the world, and he thought I was absolutely nuts, and he was going to educate me in this and that. Two years later, he had me do a teaching.
Nice.
And it took a while for me to drop little bits of information, but after 2 years, he finally came around, and he has the ear of a whole congregation of people, and he's talking about this stuff now.
That is solid gold.
You know what I'm saying? That's what you got to do. By not saying anything, nothing happens. By not doing anything, nothing happens.
Right, yeah.
You got to do something. Well, if you do something, something's going
to
happen.
Yeah. Some people are really afraid to speak, too, because they don't feel like they know what they're talking about. They're afraid to sound like an idiot. And let me tell you, like I said, I'm not an economist, you know what I mean? I mean, we're just coming here to talk about something that we know little bits of. And I mean, we're all fools, man. We all need to keep reading and figuring things out,
So. It's part of a process. Everybody should continue to grow in knowledge. I always increase that. I always say, don't believe me, do your own research. Mm-hmm. Listen to me as a guide. I'm telling you what I know. Now, I could be right or I could be wrong, but the only way you're going to find that out is if you get off your ass and do the research.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do the research, I almost guarantee you're going to find out the same thing.
Yeah.
I almost guarantee it every single time. But it requires you to do open-minded research. Because if you're not willing to do that, then you're gonna become a sheep mentality person. You're gonna follow a leader of some sort, or you're not gonna do anything. and you're not going to learn anything.
And it doesn't have to be all stuffy, like you're in a library and that kind of stuff. You know, you can also like take some misinformation and just disseminate it at a party that you go to, and you know, people still need to celebrate life and have fun and go out and make music and do art. And I keep coming back to this kind of idea because people they separate those things in life. Mm-hmm. They separate political or, as you will, like learning about politics and that kind of stuff from their other track in their life, which is maybe creative. And I think I think that's totally unnecessary. You need to shock your teachers if you're a theater student or an art student or a graphics design student. Just, you know, make it happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely had my share of debates with professors and stuff. You know, it was really interesting. I had a world religions course, what do you call it, comparative religions course. And the guy there would get in and talks about Freemasonry and stuff and the foundings of our country and things like that. And he would get all, like into it, you know? And then I would talk to my political science teacher about it, and he totally would roll his eyes.
Yeah.
So I told him one day, I'm like, you know, political science guy over there doesn't think that this is true. So they got I got them into a debate, you know? And I guess, I don't know whatever the outcome of it was. I always wanted to know because I heard that they had the conversation, and he never Bully told me what happened. He kind of just chuckled. But he said, where do you think all this stuff comes from? Come on, get real. You know, it's just, it's interesting. It's interesting what you can, what kind of changes you can make. And I'm sure that, you know, if they had enough conversating, they would have to. Truth is truth. I personally believe that. That's why I call my website Truth, Love, Freedom. I believe there is a truth. I'm not saying I know the truth. I'm saying there is a truth. And part of my mission is to explore our reality and figure out what that truth is. And I believe that the truth, when it is the truth, will stand. It'll stand against any attack. It'll stand against any person who tries to break it down and show that it's false, because if it's the truth, it will stand. And it will cause change. So all you have to do is take my prompts, go and do your own research, find out if it is the truth. And if it is the truth, you embrace it and you continue your path. And it builds you up as a person. And it, you know what I'm saying? And I just think that, you know, we should pursue the truth vigorously. Never, you know, never give up. Constantly be seeking truth. Always checking to make sure you're not in fallacy. That's just the way I choose to live my life, as a truth seeker. And I hope that you all do the same. And I hope this show was very encouraging. Hope you're going to attend the next In the Fed event. Sign up for a few of the things that you were directed to. And we'll go ahead and call it quits. Anything else to say?
No. There's too much to say.
Celebrate love. Life.
Yeah. Do everything with love, you guys.
Absolutely.
Honestly.
Like I always say, you know, we do this. We seek truth. We do it with love, and we do it for freedom. Yeah. So with that being said, peace and love. This is So Real, and I'll catch you next week.
Bye-bye.
To those who scare peace-loving people with phantoms of lost liberty, my message is this.
Revere Radio Network Tampa, the worldwide home of free speech.
Yo, we got whites killing whites, blacks killing blacks, Mexicans killing Mexicans, it's a fact. Muslims hate Jews, Jews hate Muslims, and everybody's got a problem getting through customs. Catholics, Christians, Episcopal, Protestant, tell me what the fuck is the difference, yo? Honestly, the war is bullshit, and we can't do a thing, cause Bush and Cheney got the country on a string. Movies, music, fashion, and sports, meant to keep your fucking mind off what's important. Everybody's lost it, everybody's crazy, religion's got people killing others over paintings. News got you dudes shitting over bird flus. When's the last time that you really heard news? Music is losing its heart and its beat, and all rappers do is spend money on their teeth. Yo, it's bullshit, I don't know what to believe. It's all bullshit, got me paranoid in my sleep. It's all bullshit, we all puppets under control. Who the fuck really owns your body and soul? It's bullshit, your vote don't really mean shit. It's all bullshit, the television make you feel sick. It's all bullshit, the system was built on lies. And if you can't see, motherfucker, open your eyes. They wonder why I don't wanna be a fucking rapper. So after 3 albums flop, I could be an actor. So I could sell my soul on reality shows. I wanna let my motherfucking mentality grow. They tell me concentrate on making club banging hits, and don't waste my time making songs like this. 100 proof, that's the truth, you believe that shit. Like I would ever sound like the fucking Yin Yang Twins. We got problems, we getting raped by the government, and the tension is rising. Still we cover lips, don't say that there, don't do that here. Freedom of speech, my ass, the truth is near. Democrats, Republicans, it's all the same shit, maximizing profits, it's a
dirty game, bitch. Trying to overthrow the system that oppressed us. Sit still too long and collect us.
Yo, it's bullshit.
I don't know what to believe.
It's all bullshit.
Got me paranoid in my sleep.
It's all bullshit.
We all puppets under control. Who the fuck really owns your body and soul?
It's bullshit.
Your vote don't really mean shit.
It's all bullshit.
The television make you feel sick.
It's all bullshit.
The system is built on lies. And if you can't see, motherfucker, open your eyes. Let's get deep into the blood, past the skin and veins. Black, white, brown, green, yo, we're really the same. We all products, nothing but naive consumers. Complaining is easy, but what's the solution? And the truth is, I don't see no light at the end. But I'ma fight till I'm dead, and my rifle's the pen. Yo, we hopeless, Pac knew it, that's why he left. We used euphemisms to cover up what we meant. Back in the days when they would rape African slaves, slaughtering Indians to get them out of the way. 300 years ago, that ain't really that long. Like 12 generations, they're still in control. Selling drugs on TV when you not sleeping. Too stressed out, late night, no sweet dreams. They poison us with the burgers and fries. Supersize me, motherfucker, give me a Sprite. I'm on a diet, low carb, broke with no job. No laws to protect the poor, it's so hard. Oh God, where were you when I lost all? Talking to the grass at the cemetery, it's so hard. Like trying to put a smile on my face when I'm out in the club. Everybody's fucked up and they showing me love. Fake love, fake daps, unavoidable traps. I wanna blast every one of you bastards. Y'all bullshit. Y'all bullshit.